Welcome, everybody. I guess we'll get started. My plan for today goes something like this. We'll start with a little bit of a recap, because it's generally a good idea to do that. But I'll add a little bit of additional detail to some of the things we were talking about last time involving sequential measurement, just to sort of round out that story for the moment. Then I want to get started on talking about the linear version of the story I've been telling, the larger story I've been telling. So let's call this models, by which I mean probabilistic models, linearized. I'll show you how to attach vector spaces to them and so on. If there's time, we can also talk about how we can go the other way and start with an ordered linear space of a certain type, or even more basically, and there's a pun there, as you'll see, we can even just start with a convex set and make a model out of that, make a probabilistic model in the sense that we've defined it. So say models from convex sets. It's not super, super important that I get through that. So if we don't get to that, that's fine. Just looking ahead a little bit, we've two more lectures scheduled for March. And I think I'd like to devote probably both of them to talking about composite systems, how you deal with two systems thought of as one, how you handle issues of entanglement, and what you can do once you have handled those issues. And then there'll be a break while I go home to be with my family for a little bit. And then at least the plan is that in April there'll be two further lectures, and I'll possibly either send out an email or put something on Dropbox to just ask for some input from you guys about what you'd like to hear about. I might supply a little bit of a list of possible topics, but you guys can tell me what looks good. All right, does that sound like a reasonable plan? All right. Okay, so last time, and the time before, we were talking about probabilistic models. And just to remind you, our model of a probabilistic model is a pair consisting of a test space and a convex set of probability weights, which we consider the state space. I think I mentioned last time, just in passing, I'm going to start using capital letters like A, B, and C, and so on, to stand for individual probabilistic models. You can think of them as systems. So think of these as system labels. And when I do that, I will indicate to which model the test space or the state space belongs just by doing that. Does that make sense? Go ahead, Ian.
Why B and not A?
That's an excellent question. Until you said that, I didn't know that had happened. I think the reason is that a moment before I had said A and B and so on, and whatever part of my brain was keeping track of that was misunderstanding what was going on. So thanks. All right? Okay, so we'll label things sort of like that. We were also talking about sequential measurements. Our basic model for a sort of branching sequential measurement was that if you have an initial experiment E and it has various outcomes that it might have, maybe this is our little x, x prime, x double prime, or so on, you could make a follow-up measurement that would depend upon which outcome you saw. And it would have whatever outcome it had, et cetera. So you can condition the second stage measurement on the first outcome that you get. And the outcome set for something that looks like that is just a big union over the outcomes, little x in the outcome set big E, of singleton x cross set f sub x. So it's the set of all ordered pairs, little x, y, such that little x is in E and little y is in big F sub x. Any set constructed in that way, I think of as representing a two-stage measurement of this sort. And if we gather them all together, we have what we call the forward product. Now, last time, I was principally considering a situation where all of the experiments, all of the tests came from the same stock of tests, the same test space, big M. But there's nothing that prohibits us from drawing the first measurement from one model and the secondary tests from another. In fact, I won't go into this, in principle, you could even condition which model gets to supply the second stage test on the outcome of the first stage. But that's a little more generality than is worth pursuing right now. So what I do want to say is that you can, given two test spaces, maybe coming from two different models, A and B, you can define a model which I will call A forward arrow B, like that. I'll call it that and I'll write it that way. This way, its test space is the forward arrow of the two test spaces. In other words, it consists of all of these sets where big E comes from A, and F sub X comes from B. So that set is what I would mean by the test space of A forward arrow B, or M of A forward arrow M of B. Notice that this allows us to tell the following kind of story about two characters, A and B, Alice and Bob, right? The story is that Alice gets to make a measurement on her system over here, and then she gets an outcome, and then she communicates that outcome to Bob along with some instructions saying, or maybe Alice and Bob have to have prearranged this, so suppose they've decided in advance what will happen. Alice makes her measurement, and if she gets outcome X, Bob is going to perform experiment F subscript X on his system, right? So this models that kind of sequential measurement that also involves perhaps separated parties and classical communication in one direction from Alice to Bob. Question?
So AB with the arrow is another model.
Yes, which means?
State space.
Yes, so I haven't completed the, great, I haven't completed the description of this model because I've only told you about the test space. So just as Marina says, I owe you a description of the state space. So what is that? Well, let me remind you that we had completely described all the possible probability weights on one of these forward arrow combinations. Every probability weight on MA forward arrow MB, which is the same thing as M of A forward arrow B, looks like this. It's a function which I denote by alpha semicolon beta, which evaluates on an outcome, which would be an ordered pair little xy, by evaluating alpha, which is a probability weight on A, at x. And beta is not a probability weight, it's a function from the set of outcomes that Alice could get, two probability weights. So it assigns to every outcome on the Alice side a probability weight beta sub x on Bob's side, and then that is what gets evaluated at Y. All right, so we had that recipe. All combinations of probability weights on A and probability weight valued functions from outcomes of A to probability weights on B give rise to probability weights on the forward arrow in just this way. So, since we know what the probability weights look like, let's ask ourselves what would be a reasonable way to narrow down the set of probability weights to reflect the fact that Alice and Bob aren't working with arbitrary probability weights. They're working with the specific probability weights that come from their assigned state spaces. And I think the answer is pretty clear. We should say that alpha comes from Bob's state space. It's not an arbitrary probability weight, but it's a state that Alice can actually prepare, for instance. And similarly, the beta x's should come from Bob's. So, so we're going to let omega of forward arrow AB be the set of all of these probability weights, alpha, beta, such that alpha is in Alice's state space and beta sub x is in Bob's state space for all little x in. I'm going to start doing this, so I might as well do it now. I like to use big X for the total outcome set of a test space, so I'm just going to make that depend on the model. So that's Alice's total outcome set. It's the union of all the tests she can make. All right, so that's my forward arrow model, right? And I'm hoping you'll agree with me that this is a very sort of, you know, simple, almost naive, you know, construction, right? We haven't had to make many assumptions. Everything seems very straightforward and very plausible. Agreed? Perhaps there's one point we could press on a little bit, and that is, do we really want to allow beta x to depend, you know, the second stage thing, do we want that to be able to depend on the outcome little x completely arbitrarily, or would it be reasonable to impose some physical restrictions? Maybe big X is a topological space. Maybe we would want this to be at least continuous, something like that. Answer yes, by all means, but then you'd be defining a more restricted model, and that's fine, but I want to have this on the table as a starting point for such further constructions, right? This is the simplest model or most general model of this kind of forward product. Okay, so that's where we left off, plus a little bit, and I think we still have plenty of time for linearization, so let me just stop and ask if there are questions at this point or anything that needs some clarification before we move on. Okay. Maybe I should say just one other small thing. Just to set us up for something that I will try to get to. So let me start this with a question of my own. How many of you remember what it means for two events to be perspective to one another? Okay, so let me remind you. Okay, so recall. Events little a and little b, say, the events of model A, the events of the test space of model A, are perspective if and only if there exists an event C in the same set of events, so that A is complementary to C, which means A intersect C is empty, and A union C is some test M of A. And similarly, B and C don't overlap, and they also union up to a test, maybe F, in M of B. So a kind of Grigi diagram-esque picture of that looks something like this. Here is event A. Think of it as sort of a fat node in a Grigi diagram. It might have a bunch of outcomes in it. Then Down here, there's another cluster of outcomes. This line means there's no overlap. They're completely disjoint. And together, they make a test. Here's E. This is C. And then all of these outcomes in C, while they belong to test E, also belong to a test called F, a different test. And the remaining stuff in F over here, that would be event B. And in this case, we would say A and B are perspective. Just to orient you a little further, if the tests that we're looking at are orthonormal bases in some Hilbert space, our most simple model of quantum mechanical experiments, you could ask when are two collections of mutually orthogonal unit vectors thought of as events, when are they perspective? Well, if you end up with this configuration, the span of the vectors in A is going to be orthogonal to the span of the vectors in C, and the direct sum of those two subspaces will be all of your Hilbert space. Does that make sense to everybody? Right? You take an orthonormal basis, you chop it in two, you look at the span of the first bunch of vectors, the span of the second bunch of vectors, and you've got a direct sum decomposition of your Hilbert space. But now, that means that the span of B also gives me an orthogonal direct sum decomposition with the span of C. But the only way that can happen is if these two spans are the same. So events, which in the simple quantum model are just sets, not full orthonormal bases, but you know, sets of mutually orthogonal unit vectors, are perspective if and only if they have the same span. Actually, in infinite dimensions, closed span. All right? Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. All right, so that's perspectivity. Anytime two events are perspective, that implies that they get the same probability in every probability weight, and in particular, therefore, in every state. So knowing that two events are perspective guarantees that they are equiprobable in every possible state. Yes?
You talked about equivalence relations, and you said that they weren't always equivalence relations.
Unless the test space of A has a special combinatorial property, which is still lingering over here, called algebraic, or algebraicity, I guess would be the noun form of that, which says if you've got these guys perspective, and this event complementary to this event, then these are also complementary. This union would be a test. And lots of things, I think we agreed last time that pretty much everything we'd looked at was algebraic. It's not a completely innocent, but a reasonably weak technical restriction. And once that's in place, perspectivity is an equivalence relation. The reason I bring this up is that this forward arrow model, in a way, plays hob with this relation of perspectivity. In the forward arrow, note, you can have events A and B in, say, the set of events for A, and you can have an event C belonging maybe to Bob. And it can happen that A is equivalent to B, but A followed by C, the Cartesian product of these two events, which would be an event for the forward product, might not be. That looks like an X. I'll say it like this. The fact that A is perspective to B does not imply that A followed by C is perspective to B followed by C. That does work in the other argument. So if I looked at the forward arrow of B then A, C followed by A would be perspective to C followed by B. So we talked about that last time. I don't want to get into a lot of that. Although, Maria, you look like you have a question. No? Just taking it in? Okay. All right. So just keep that in the back of your mind. Okay? It's also true, by the way, sort of in parallel with this. Remember, perspective events are equiprobable. it may be that A and B have the same probability in absolutely every state. But if you perform a two-stage experiment, and so to say condition on A versus B, these events might not have the same probability in certain states. And you can kind of see how you might rig that up using this construction of states. Okay. Good. Are we ready to linearize things? Are we sort of, you know, past ready for some vector spaces? Okay, I see smiles, I see nods, so let's linearize. I guess I'm gonna start over here. Well, how should I start? Rats. I feel kind of uncomfortable because I'm sort of right up against, you know, leaning here. I don't know what to do about it. No, it's fine, I'm just joking. So, all right, so let's linearize and then I'll move that way. Okay. Do you all agree that the state space of a model A is a subset of the gigantic space of all real valued functions on the set of outcomes? How many of you are familiar with this sort of notation? It might be not everybody, some people, but not everybody. So just as a side note, very generally, if you have two sets X and Y, mathematicians like to write that for the set of all functions F from X to Y. Motivated by the fact that if X and Y are finite sets, the number of such functions is the size of Y to the size of X power. Okay? And so in particular, R to the X is the set of all real valued functions on the set X. And that's always a vector space, right? Because we know how to add real valued functions on a set, and we know how to multiply them by scalars, and you know, all of that behaves in the natural way. So, yes, nice vector space. And nearly every vector space that you meet in mathematics, in actual sort of day-to-day practice, is a subspace of some space of functions, or can at least be viewed that way in some reasonably straightforward way. All right, so our states, by definition, are probability weights, and so they are indeed real-valued functions on the set of outcomes. So they do live in a vector space. There's this ambient vector space that, of course, they live in. Yeah? Well, that contains a lot of other junk we don't care about. So one way of ignoring that other junk is to concentrate on the span of this set, in this set. So I'm going to make a definition. Big V of model A is simply the span of omega of A in R to the X. So it's a subspace of R to the X, the one spanned by the things in omega. Now, to go to make the following story go the more smoothly, the more quickly, I'm going to make a few further standing assumptions here. One assumption is that I'm going to assume that omega of A from now on is convex as a subset of R to the X, that in other words, weighted averages of states still count as states. It's a way of saying that we're going to allow mixed states. We didn't have to do that, but we're going to. Is that okay? Right? I'm also going to assume that it is closed. Closed in what sense? Closed in the product topology here, the pointwise topology. Closed in the sense that if I take pointwise limits of states, I still have states. Okay. I'm also going to make an assumption about script M of A. I'm going to assume that that is, to use a little jargon, locally finite. I'll tell you what that means. It simply means that all the tests are finite. the total outcome set, big X doesn't have to be finite, but each individual test will be finite. Okay. In the case of the quantum model that we've been talking about, where tests are orthonormal bases, of course, this is going to mean that we're looking at a finite dimensional Hilbert space. Yes?
Why did you put the word local there?
Because it only the finiteness condition only applies, so to speak, locally to each test separately. But it's not a claim about the full global outcome set.
You can have a number of sets.
Correct. An easy way to do that would be just imagine an infinite number of classical bits, nothing to do with each other. They're just, you know, in a long row, and you'd have infinitely many outcomes, but only two outcomes per measurement. Okay. It's a little exercise to show that if M of A is locally finite, that makes the set of probability weights on M compact. Well, actually, I should say it this way. It makes it closed, pointwise closed, in the set of functions from the outcome set to the unit interval 0 to 1. And for those of you who know some topology, and if you don't, please forgive me, and also don't worry, because I won't really use this. This is compact in the product topology, Tikhonov's theorem. And since probability, this set of probability weights I'm claiming is closed, it's therefore also compact. And now the fact that I'm requiring state spaces to be closed means that they too will be compact. So all of my state spaces are going to be compact convex sets subject to these two standing assumptions. All right? So far, so good. Yile, you look sort of like you might be worried about something. I'm just going to pick on you. No, it's all right. Okay. All right? Can I elevate this? Yes, go ahead.
So for example, we cannot measure like position of a particle in a real life.
Yeah. So with this, we're making the decision to limit ourselves to basically finite dimensional models. These are only standing assumptions for expository purposes. So yes, we can still accommodate particles on a line, for example, but if I try to talk about that, we'll never finish. And so I only have a few more lectures. Is that okay? But come ask me if you want to know how you go in that direction. And I've put a little bit in the notes, or am putting a little bit in the notes to address that. Okay. So we've got this big vector space. Now, I want to mention that this isn't just a vector space. It's an ordered vector space. And now, some of you were at the talk I gave in the seminar a number of weeks ago, but let me sort of recap what I mean by this. An ordered vector space, or an ordered linear space, is a vector space, say just V generically, together with a designated positive cone, which is, in fact, a sort of infinitely extended cone in your vector space. If I multiply something by a non-negative scalar, I get something in the cone by a non-negative scalar. I stay in the cone. And if I add things in the cone, I stay in the cone. And the requirements to have an ordered vector space is that the cone intersected with the negative of the cone flipped over, is just the zero vector. So the zero vector has to belong to the cone. And it's the only thing such that it and its negative belong to the cone. And we require that the cone span the whole vector space. And another way to say that is that the cone minus the cone is the whole vector space, because any linear combination of elements in the cone could be split up as the sum of the terms with the non-negative coefficients, which is in V plus, minus the sum of the terms with absolute values of what had been negative coefficients. That's living over here. Anyway, that's just a little bit of background. The only order we are going to care about for the next little while is the pointwise order. This is ordered pointwise, which means that the positive cone consists of, I'll just use alpha generically for anything that's in big V now, so it could be a linear combination of states. The set of alphas in big V that are non-negative when evaluated at every outcome, right? They're just non-negative functions. And actually, we can draw a really kind of a nice picture of what the structure of this cone is. At least we can if we have some space. So let me grab this implement of destruction here. Okay. Our cone has an interesting structure because sitting inside this positive cone is the state space and the state space has this interesting property vis-a-vis the cone. If you give me anything in the positive cone, say alpha, you can always normalize it. If you look at the line from alpha down to zero, the set of all multiples of alpha by whatever, you will find that that line intersects the state space at a unique point. There is a unique scalar, let's say t greater than or equal to zero, so that t alpha is in omega, all right? And I'm going to let you figure out how to do that. So let's call that an exercise. It's actually spelled out in the note, but you know, try it at lunch on a napkin. Right. The best way to do exercises, I've always found. Yes. All right. An ordered vector space whose cone has a distinguished slice through it with this property, if the base is compact, is an example of what's called a base normed space. There's a norm you can put on the space in such a way that T actually is, I guess, 1 over the norm of alpha. I should, so that's just a little side note. I really don't want to go down that alley right now, but nice to know. I should also say that this here is true provided alpha is not 0. Obviously, I can't normalize the 0 vector in this way. I'll also remark that things in the positive cone, but beneath the state space, things of norm less than or equal to 1, those we will call subnormalized states, and they are actually quite useful and physically meaningful, right? They're like states, except they don't add up to 1. They add up to something less than 1 on tests. All right, so that's a first step towards linearizing the theory. We can always look at the span of the state space. Well, but what about the outcomes and the tests and so on? Where do they fit into this picture? Well, they fit into the picture through the dual space. So let's talk about the dual of V. Is everybody comfortable with that notation for the dual of a vector space? Does anybody need a refresher on dual spaces, or are we okay? Right? So just because nobody's saying anything, I'll assume the answer to that is yes, please. So it's the set of all linear functionals on V. It's the set of all functions from V to our scalars, which are the reals, such that F is linear. Now, there's sort of a notational dispute, I guess. In finite dimensions, or if you don't care about topological issues, that's all there is to say. But This vector space, as I've already kind of hinted, does have a topological structure. First of all, it's got this pointwise topology on it, but it's also possible to put a norm on it, so it actually will turn out, actually turns out to be a Banach space, if that's okay to use that word. So I'm going to use this, should that be an issue, for the bounded or continuous linear functionals. Not everybody likes that. Some people like to write V prime for the continuous dual. You'll see that a lot. The people I worked with always use stars, with the exception of Hans Fischer, an extremely formidable Swiss mathematician who used to get extremely angry about it and had very unkind things to say about people who use stars. Right? And I won't pursue that right here. Okay, that's extremely unflattering. But I will use stars. All right, so what lives in that space? Well, an interesting fact, a little lemma, which I may or may not supply a proof of in the notes, but you can also treat as an exercise. Yeah, but it's not a super easy exercise, and you need the Hahn-Banach theorem, but it is true. Because omega is compact, we have the following. For every bounded affine map, F from omega of A to the reals, pause, affine, just another word for convex linear, preserves convex combinations. Every bounded affine map from omega of A to R extends uniquely to a linear functional that I'll call by the same name from V to R. In other words, to an element of V star. So basically, the linear functionals on V are in one-to-one correspondence with the bounded affine functionals on this base on omega. All right, that's the basic structural result. in particular, there is a unit functional which I'll just call U, and it looks like this. U of alpha is equal to 1 for every alpha in omega of A. Clearly, the constant function 1 is affine, yes, and it's bounded, looks bounded to me, yes, that's meant to be funny, so, haha. Okay, and so by this structural result, it extends uniquely to a linear function on the whole space, which I'll call the unit function for obvious reasons. Okay, here are some more functionals. Since we've constructed our vector space V out of a model in which the states, the elements of a big omega, are literally functions on a set X, we also have evaluation functionals that we can play with. So for every little x in big X of A, we have a functional which I will call little x with a hat over it in V star, and it's simply the functional that evaluates states at x. Okay? You always have evaluation functionals, very useful gadgets. We can do a little better if little a is an event of A, then we can define a functional A hat that again just evaluates alpha at the event A, and I remind you what that means is we're just adding up alpha of x over all of the outcomes, little x in A, that's how you evaluate the probability of an event, but then that's the same thing as saying that we're adding up x hat of alpha, and so what we can say is that A hat is the sum over all the x's in A of x hat like that. In particular, that means that our unit function, functional u, can be written as the sum over the elements of any test of x hat. Why? Because that will always add up to one on a state, on a normalized state. Marina, you look puzzled by something.
No, I think I just,
Like, okay. All right, yes? Okay. So that's kind of cool because it means that this hat operation is giving us something like a vector valued weight on our test space, right? Every outcome is now being sent not to a number but to a vector in this positive cone, and these vectors are all adding up to the same thing, namely this functional u, over every test. So that's kind of a nice way to look at it. Okay, a little bit of further generality. U is an example of what's called an order unit. Actually, a little bit more technically, it's an Archimedean order unit, but never mind that, see the notes. In practice, what this is meaning for us is that if you look at the interval between u and minus u, so that's the set of all functionals f in v star, such that f is between u and minus u, what's the ordering here? It's the ordering of, it's the dual ordering. What this means is f is less than or equal to g if and only if f of alpha is less than or equal to g of alpha for all alpha in omega, right? We've already seen that functionals are determined by their action on omega, so we might as well just order things pointwise there. That gives us an ordering on v star. This is just all the functionals between u and u star. My claim is that that can be taken as the unit ball for a norm, called the order unit norm. And in fact, in this particular construction, again, because the base is compact, you can show that the V star will be complete in that norm. It's a Banach space too. So we have these two dual ordered Banach spaces. One is of a type called a base norm space. This is, you know, its dual order unit space. There's a whole literature on that going back to the 70s, and it's pretty cool actually, but I don't want to dive into that well, right? It's fairly deep. And I only have 15 minutes. Okay, so what we've done is we've represented, let's just take stock, we've represented our state space as the base of a cone for this big ordered vector space V of the model. We've represented all of the outcomes and all the events as linear functionals. Actually, these linear functionals live in not this unit ball, but just the positive part of the unit ball. So let me give you a bit of notation for that. So further notation. That set of functionals, the set of functionals in V star that take values between 0 and 1 on every normalized state, which is another way of saying it's the set of all functionals between the zero functional and the order unit. That is called the order interval of the space V star, that order unit space. And what we've seen over here is that events of our test space can be converted into functionals living in that order unit. And we have this observation here that if we add up the events, the very simple events, single outcome events, or their hats rather, as x runs over any test, we get the order unit. More generally, if a1 through, say, an is a set of events that partition a test, say e, then the sum over the i's of the evaluation functionals for those events is going to add up to u, the order unit, okay? Because still it's the case that if you give me an alpha, it's going to add up to 1 over that test e, right? And that sum will be the sum of alpha evaluated at this event plus alpha evaluated at that event going down the line here. That suggested generalization, we can define, I guess I'll call this definition, an effect on the model A is any functional f in the order unit. It will, after all, assign probabilities between 0 and 1 to states. Or maybe we could say states will assign to it probabilities between 0 and 1. So maybe it's a potential model for some measurement outcome that we simply didn't include in our original model, but that is consistent with the rest of the model. And then we will say that a finite observable, I'm going to write observe period for observable. No, I want to write observe apostrophe BLE for observable, is, colon, a list of, let's call them Fs, a list of effects F1 through Fn in the order unit that happen to add up in the order interval, rather, that happen to add up to the order unit. If you have such a list and you have a state, an element of omega, a normalized state, then evaluating these guys at alpha and summing, you will get 1. And that suggests that if we want to think of f of alpha as the probability of f in state alpha, that means the probabilities of these effects f1 through fn in any given state alpha will add up to 1. So this might be a potential model for some finite measurement that maybe it's one of these things that I had earlier coming from evaluation functionals. But maybe it's not. Maybe it's some additional thing that you've left out of your model, but that is consistent with the structure of the rest of the model that you could potentially add. Now, at this point, we can go backwards. Given an order unit space, and I realize I haven't formally defined that for you, but you, I hope, get the idea, an ordered vector space with a unit functional that will allow you to make that the unit ball, and so on and so on. Given an ordered vector space, let's call it, what's a good name for an ordered unit space? Can I call it big block E like that? Big block E suggests it's a vector space, okay? And it's a vector space in which effects are going to live, right? So let's call any f in the order interval, the set of positive functionals between 0 and 1, an effect. Let's let script m of E be the set of finite observables as defined over there, all right? And let's let omega of E be the set of all positive functionals on E. So these are going to be linear functionals on E. Positive means that they are positive on, actually, let me give these a different name. Let me call these, I don't know, rho. So they're positive functionals on E. They assign non-negative values to all effects, and hence to all positive elements of E. And crucially, they assign the value 1 to the order unit. Such functionals are in the literature called states. They are the states of the order unit space. This is the state space of the order unit space. This is a probabilistic model. So any probabilistic model gives you a version of this picture here, where the state space is the concrete state space of probability weights on some given test space. Or you can start with an arbitrary order unit space, construct its state space, build your sort of collection of all possible effects this way, and define a model that way. There's a third construction that I guess I should mention, and I'm only going to do it in the most hand-wavy possible way, which means I'm going to put my chalk down to free up my hands for waving. If we remember the... Oh, maybe I can't, because I think I erased something important. Yeah, okay, so I will draw one picture and then erase. Then drop the chalk. Not erase. Remember that we had this picture of the cone in V of A. That's a very niggardly cone. There we go. So, like so. Okay? Right? Base. Well, a space with an ordered vector space with a cone that has a slice through it like this, singled out, right, with this sort of uniqueness property about normalization. As I mentioned earlier, that's called a cone-based space. If you start with actually base norm space for our purpose, if you start with one of these, then its dual is an order unit space. So rather than starting with the order unit space, I could start with a compact convex set. Build a vector space this way, take its dual, that's my order unit space, get a model in that way, all right? Now, compactness does a lot of work for you. If you set things up correctly, you will find that the state space of, I have to be a little careful here. Yeah, the state space of V star, if you start with compact convex set omega, build your state space, and then you could find the state space of that, it will typically be bigger than omega. But if you insist that all of your states should be weak star continuous, then you'll get back the original omega. So there's a pretty tight connection between V and V star, omega, and the state space of V star. And this is a point at which I want to say, yeah, just two more things that we're actually going to finish for once, I think, about on time. Partly because I've been going rapidly and waving my hands. There is a position you can take, or an idea that you could entertain at this point, which is, look, it seems like I'm able to get pretty much everything if I just start with the states. If I just start with a compact convex set and just say that's my state space, then I can build this ordered vector space with, you know, that as the base of a cone, take the dual space, define observable, you know, effects and observables just as before. Who needs the whole test space rigmarole? Maybe that was a nice scaffolding for, you know, motivating this, but once we've climbed it, now we see that we didn't really need it. Right? You could take that point of view. And that is, I would say, in a way, the prevailing point of view, because most work on GPTs takes place at this level. Most work on GPT says we have a convex set, that's our state space. We define effects. There are functionals that assign values between 0 and 1 to states. We can say measurements or sets of effects that add up to this constant functional with value 1. And that's all. Now, the problem with that, there are a couple of problems with that. One problem is, how do you know a priori that every possible assignment of, well, first of all, how do you know that every possible affine functional that gives you values between 0 and 1, you know, really represents something physical? Even if you can really prepare all the states in big omega, does that really license you to say that every, you know, every affine functional taking values between 0 and 1 represents a possible outcome of a measurement I can really do? Even if you believe the answer is yes, how do you know that every collection of such functionals that adds up to 1 represents the set of outcomes of a single measurement that I can make physically? There are no good answers to that. Those two, the assumption that yes, every effect is physical is called the no restriction hypothesis for effects. Even if you entertain it, the further hypothesis that every, say, finite observable represents a real measurement, that's the no restriction hypothesis for measurements. Those are both strong assumptions. Okay, so you could say, well, maybe the test space idea is not bad, but maybe we should just replace outcomes and events by special effects. Maybe we should just single out some special effects and special observables and, you know, make the test space live inside V star. Not unreasonable. Unless you have studied sequential measurement. The last thing I want to do is to talk about the space V, the big V space, associated with a forward product. Let me just tell you what it looks like. Question, what's V of forward product of A and B? Answer, that's the question. Answer, it's the space of V of B valued weights on script M of A. In other words, it's the set of functions, let's just call them little omega, from X of A to V of B that add up to a constant over every test, all right? Let me make this even a little simpler, the story a little simpler. Suppose we're only interested in what's the positive cone of this forward arrow. It's easier to see if we do that than these are positive cone valued weights on X of A. So there's such functions such that there exists a common state B with sum as X runs over E of omega of X equaling beta. This is in plus here. they're not normalized necessarily, right? Yes. Actually, wait a minute. No, they're not, because I'm looking at all of V plus, not just the normalized states. Okay, so what's the point here? The point is that this, while it depends on V of B, doesn't depend on V of A. It depends on X of A and on the structure of M of A. Remember earlier we said equiprobable events of A don't necessarily give you equiprobable events in A forward arrow B. And that's reflected here. So if you want to pursue sequential measurements, you want to study those, you can't really stay inside this purely linearized framework. You do need the test spaces. One thing you could do, though, if you are sort of really attracted to this linear framework, which is still very useful, no question about it, is you could say, let me just say that the fact that, you know, these things look like this, you know, it disagrees with me. It displeases me. I'm going to insist that I'm only going to look at those forward arrow states that do behave linearly in the first argument. It will turn out, and we'll explore this starting next time, that if you do that, you are basically enforcing a no signaling condition. This enforces a kind of no signaling condition from B to A. You're getting one in the other direction, or to put it differently, you could look at the test space A forward arrow B union, what I'll call A backward arrow B, where this is just defined the same way, except the tests go that way, but you still write outcomes in the same order, so you have the same outcome set. And if you look at states on that, then that does depend linearly on both factors, so to say. However, it's not clear that that's a good model for sequential measurement, because, you know, now you have, you know, you have a situation where statistics in the future doesn't depend on what you did in the past, which sounds wrong somehow. Yes? So anyway, much more on all of that next time. It's cool, and I'm excited to tell you about it, but I shouldn't do that right now, right?
I think that people are waiting outside.
Okay, well, that's a good reason to stop. Okay. Let me know if you have questions. Just, you know, track me down. I'll be in my office most of the day, or send me an email. Thanks. I'll see you next.